Hello, Dr. Kelly. Good to join you.
Good to speak to you too. Perhaps, Dr. Dad, you can tell us who you are and your journey here tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's great to be here. I'm sure we're going to have a great discussion. As you can tell, I'm from the same country as yourself. I grew up in the UK, just outside London. Went to medical school at Cardiff University, about 2 hours west of here. I worked in the National Health Service for about a year and 6 months or so, and then came to the United States to do my internal medicine residency training, which I completed in Baltimore. I know this isn't a route taken by a lot of UK graduates. I did so for a number of reasons, including at the time really wanting to train in the US. I'd visited the US lots of times and was quite impressed by the medical training. Got through residency, then shortly after I started working as an attending, I became very aware that a lot of what I was seeing in terms of chronic disease was related to lifestyle. And that got me on my health and wellness path and wanting to really address this more and think about the root causes, about why so many people are ill. And I got into that space, was in it for a few years, blogging, making some videos. And then, of course, the COVID pandemic hit, and that was a game changer for lots of us. That also opened my eyes up to a lot of the conflicts of interest and corruption in medicine. And my shift went over to COVID and resonated with lots of people. Fast forward to now, a few years later, I'm still very much beating the drum of health and wellness. I'm on lots of different social media channels. A lot of my work right now focuses on naturally reversing type 2 diabetes, actually, which is exploding in society. As you know, that's a lot of what I talk about online. And I still really, as well as focusing on that, want to address the widespread corruption and conflicts of interest within our field. And take it from here that although the UK has a very different system, I don't think you're far behind us. I think a lot of the conflicts are a lot hidden. And I believe it's very, very important for everybody, as many people as possible, to be aware, because ultimately this is about health and wellness. And my goal is for people to be as well as possible and live their best possible life. But you can't do that until you've cut through all the noise and realize that you're actually being given a lot of misinformation.
Yeah, very interesting. I went to university in Cardiff as well, actually.
Oh, you did? So,
yeah, which year did you go?
I graduated 2003, actually. That's very interesting. You went to Cardiff. We probably had a lot of the same professors and teachers then.
Yes, we would have done, wouldn't we? I graduated in 2010, but it was my second degree. But I like the winding path in life. So before I got into medicine, I worked as a systems analyst. I did a bit of international development and I thoroughly enjoyed my time. I suppose I worked for a couple of years and I started to question things. And then it was really when I started locum and I had a bit more time, but I just thought this system is broken. It's very clear to me that we see the entire paradigm very differently than the majority of doctors.
We do. And I believe it's very sad indeed. I think a lot of doctors, they're not bad people, but of course, the people in a system that is very bad are never bad people. Whatever system we're talking about, it's the fact that many are blind to what's going on and blind to how the authorities and the conflicts of interest are really viewing them as useful idiots. And I don't use that term lightly.
It's very interesting what you say there about blindness, because I think that's exactly what the problem is, that there is a blindness to the big picture. I think that most doctors are trying to help and they're kept very busy because they're kept firefighting for the immediate problem that's in front of them. So
they are. Yep.
A system has evolved under the influence of the big pharmaceutical industry, big food, and effectively doctors are treating the symptoms as far as I can see it. And most doctors don't, to be fair to them, have time to look at the bigger picture, and it's not in their scope to look at the bigger picture, because the more specialized they become, it's just not their role. And that's the way the system's evolved, and it's very convenient for these big companies.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of doctors are really stuck. I mean, you have to consider something else. I actually really think in the United States, they're actually much more in line, if that's possible, for a variety of different reasons, including the fact that they are crushed with hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. They are effectively in a state of servitude. I mean, some of these new grads, 500,000 plus debt. And I look back and think that we were complaining over our tiny tuition fees in comparison, but they're not going to step out of line. I mean, they've got mortgages and families. I still don't think it's an excuse. But yeah, the doctors are in a position where they're trained as well to follow from up above, to listen to what the societies say. And I really wish more doctors would wake up to where these recommendations are coming from and how they are part of a system where, when you look at the metrics, because of course, how you measure anything in the end is the ultimate signal of how well it's doing in every metric possible. Tim, we're just getting worse and worse every single year. So I wish more doctors would ask the question, what are we doing here? Are we contributing to the health and well-being of people, or are we part of a sinking ship?
So what sort of time span was this awakening? Did you start to question things while you were in medical school?
I didn't really. But to be fair, I don't think things were as bad. I think we've had like an explosion, especially over the last 5 to 10 years. Even looking back, when I was in the US, yeah, we had obesity and type 2 diabetes, but nowhere near the levels they are now. Things have got especially bad over the last 5 years. You kind of have to see it to believe it. And to be fair, I mean, I'm actually on a quick trip back to the UK right now, but every time I come back to the UK, things look slightly worse. I don't think you're that far behind us right now in the US, but the US still is on a different level. You have to see it to believe it, especially in younger people. It's really shocking what's happened. So I think there was much more of an awakening to happen, and the complete blindness of the authorities. Sometimes it literally makes me want to tear my hair out, as I know a lot of people in listening right now see my tweets and see my posts. I mean, it's astonishing that we could be, as a medical profession, so blind to this problem that is right in front of us. We're literally sitting on a time bomb. And how on earth we couldn't make this metabolic health catastrophe the prime focus of everything we're doing, I do not know. And now you throw in the other aspect over the last couple of years with pushing these weight loss drugs. And I think we're actually going to fall off a cliff at some point in the next few years. We just can't see it coming. I very much liken the metabolic health catastrophe to what was going on with smoking in the 1960s and 70s, where you had a handful of doctors saying, it's bad, you have to stop things. But I mean, in the 1970s, doctors were still smoking on ward rounds, and we were giving patients cigarettes in the hospital. We were so blind to this problem in front of us. In fact, a patient the other day told me that he remembers in the 1970s, he was having a Band-Aid changed. He had some sort of wound, and a doctor was literally puffing a cigarette at the same time, and the smoke was going in his face, and he was coughing, and the doctor saying, oh, don't worry about it, it's fine. I mean, we look at behavior like that and think it's unacceptable today, but actually it was happening then, and there was a complete blindness from the whole profession. I always say history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And I think we're in exactly the same position now with the metabolic health catastrophe, obesity, ultra-processed foods. We just can't see it yet.
Exactly. You see the trolleys going around in the hospital, concentrated orange juice being served up to patients, and then take that with your insulin. It's a cocktail for absolute disaster, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I've seen your post on this. I think your posts on Twitter are fantastic as well. I see it every day. I mean, we're giving diabetics in the hospital pancakes. I mean, after chemotherapy, patients in America are given large amounts of candy to celebrate. I mean, what on earth are we thinking? I think future generations are going to look back and say, what a bunch of idiots.
And there's another level to this as well, especially in America, where the cost of healthcare, well, call it healthcare, but it's actually sick care, is so expensive. The people are working 2-3 jobs just to pay the bills. And then that adds to stress. So that makes you more likely to go and get that processed food while you're in the shop. You can just look in the shops and see what the problem is. There's something needs to be done about it. And I suppose that's what we can talk about.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, ultra processed foods, as I've tweeted about many times, in my opinion, a much bigger problem than tobacco was. I don't remember tobacco and smoking ever causing widespread problems in teenagers, but now we've got explosions of fatty liver disease and type 2 diabetes in teenagers. This disaster that's in front of us is beyond all measure, and yet there's barely any talk about ultra-processed foods being a worse cancer on society than smoking, but it's so obvious to those of us who are awake.
And I suppose that ties into the bigger picture again with the capture of media. There's not really the journalism that we should be getting. So this is why I've set up the podcast of just banging the drum, because the people who should be raising the alarm bell, they're not, because big food and the pharmaceutical industry pay a lot of money for advertising, don't they?
Well, they do. Have you been to the US recently, Tim?
I should tell you, actually. So my wife's American. She moved over here from Portland, and we got married and we've got 2 kids here.
Very interesting. Okay, so this is Portland in Maine or on the West Coast?
Well, both actually. Her mum's from Portland, Oregon, and her dad's not far from Portland, Maine. So I get to go to both sides. So I'm very interested in America and American politics, what's happening over there.
Got
you. I considered maybe could I work there, but I'm not sure that I'd be up for doing the exams. But yeah, it's very interesting to hear your take on things over there.
Yeah, it's obviously a very different system to the UK, but the problems are very similar. So America may have given the world many good things. I mean, I'm a dual Brit US citizen. I'm very proud to be an American citizen. I think the US has been an immense force of good for the last few hundred years. The Constitution, many of the cultural things which come from the US, but we've taken a rapid decline, as the UK has over the last 5-10 years, with various elements of our culture. And fortunately, the mainstream media, I actually believe that it's now an overwhelmingly negative force, because you have this complete capture by business interests. And I believe the UK is actually better. I mean, looking at various stories that are being reported, you see it there. You see it every day. I mean, literally every other ad on cable TV, which I've now cancelled because of this, best thing I ever did, by the way, not only saving money, but not having to view constant pharmaceutical ads. It's very clear they're sponsoring all of the main channels. There will never be any nuanced discussions about vaccine side effects, anything bad in the US media. Whereas in the UK, you do have some publications who will talk about these things, but the US is a complete capture. So in that sense, I'm sad to say it's not really a free country. The pharmaceutical industry is now captured every single level, whether it's mainstream media, but also the political sphere, where 2/3 of congressmen and senators of both parties are now captured by pharma. This is why I think in many ways we are a uniparty over there. I'm not optimistic that things will change no matter who wins the election. There may be some superficial changes, but the pharmaceutical industry over there is out of control. As many other doctors said, including Dr. Asim Malhotra, who's wonderful, I believe it's now a negative net force in the world, which is very, very sad.
Yeah, I think there's capture over here as well, though. I think the BBC is captured. Have you heard of the Trusted News Initiative?
I have, yes.
Yes, that's been applied to Reuters, and that's got links to Pfizer as well. I think it does spread around the world, but it can see how it's particularly bad in America. One benefit in the UK is we don't have pharmaceutical adverts, which is helpful. I think the only other place that you have them is New Zealand, but it's a bit more heavily regulated.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, the US, it's on a different level. You have to see it to believe it. But I don't want to be extreme here. It's not like we haven't got some good things from pharmaceutical companies. I do believe one area where we excel, which is an area I work in when I do hospital work, I work in acute care. I think we're very good at fixing acute things quickly. There's nowhere else I would rather be if I had a trauma or sepsis. We're very, very good at that in the US, but chronic disease, we absolutely suck. And my strongest advice to anybody listening is, if you are at risk or you suffer from a chronic disease, really do your best to get better so that you don't get sucked into the system and become a recurrent customer and ultimately spend hard-earned money on a merry-go-round, which you will get sucked into. So I personally, as you know, do everything possible to stay away from the system. I don't want to get dragged in. Obviously, if you have an acute condition, you have no choice. But anything else, you really should do your best for yourself and your family to stay as healthy as possible and well away from the healthcare system.
Exactly. I noticed you've been tweeting about high blood pressure recently, what we call hypertension. Perhaps you can talk about that, maybe use it as an example.
Firstly, I believe we way over-treat hypertension in the United States. I think, especially at an older age, there is a whole generation who is over-medicated. As a consequence, not getting enough perfusion to the brain, they are prone to dizziness, weakness, falling, etc., all sorts of other complications. And I also believe it could be contributing to dementia. But at a younger age, the fact which many, many practicing doctors are not aware of is that hypertension invariably goes hand in hand with insulin resistance. It's the same mechanism which leads to a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol. They all go together in many ways. They're one disease. We have a lot of evidence that insulin resistance is the cause of hypertension in a younger person. You get the 1% who may have a hormonal disorder or some sort of blood vessel issue, but in most people, It is that, and there's a variety of different mechanisms postulated. I don't want to dive too much into science. These are hypotheses, but there could be increased sympathetic nervous system activity, which insulin resistance has been associated with. There could be impaired endothelial function. Dysregulation of insulin signaling at the cellular level can do it, and also increased sodium reabsorption. So all of those mechanisms could contribute, but what we do know is that a massive, massive proportion of younger people, let's say under the age of 60, with hypertension, if you were to do lab tests on them, they are invariably insulin resistant, which is why if we try to reverse it naturally, often their blood pressure improves.
Yeah, and then you end up on these tablets that can cause longer-term problems.
Exactly. Yes, yeah, that's right. And it's not uncommon. I'm sure it's the same here. In the US, these meds will get piled up on top of each other. One medication won't be maxed out. Another one will be added. Then you throw in a couple of different specialists who are adding in more and more. And before you know it, people are in their 60s on four different blood pressure pills. Actually, it does happen in the UK because I have family members who this has happened to.
We're not going upstream to find out what the problem is. We're trying to interfere with the downstream effect of the problem rather than dealing with the root cause.
Exactly. And this gets to the issue with so many illnesses we're treating. And I'd really like everybody listening to take this on board. Whether we're talking about high blood pressure, diabetes, or cholesterol, let's take those three illnesses, which are absolutely massive. Most people out there probably have one or the other by the time they reach 45. So I'm talking about hypertension, diabetes, and high cholesterol. Our whole way of thinking is you can imagine a wall with a massive hole in it from termite. And you can see that there's an explosion of termites and it's caused a hole. And we come along as a medical profession and we stick a picture over the hole and we're very happy. Ha, look, we can't see it anymore. There's a picture over it, which is what fixing the number is. But hold on a minute, right behind the picture, the hole is still there. It keeps getting worse and worse. You have not fixed the root problem. And this is the insanity. And future generations are going to look back and say, what were you doing here?
And as the hole behind the picture gets bigger, what do we do? Put a bigger picture over it.
Yeah. Then we come along and put a bigger picture on it. And how on earth more doctors who are supposed to be intelligent people aren't questioning this? Like, when I speak to some doctors, they sort of have a moment when I tell them this, as if they haven't thought of it before. I mean, why are supposedly intelligent people who are supposed to be in the top 2% of the country in terms of intelligence, how can they be so easily fooled into being happy that they fixed a number and not see that they haven't fixed the upstream problem at all? And pharma, of course, runs rings around us as well. And it's absolutely crazy that we would think that if we lower the LDL or we bring the glucose down or we bring the hypertension down, that we fix the problem. I mean, at the extremes, that might be true. But we haven't fixed the problem, and we have hundreds of millions of people taking these medications religiously, and they're probably having minimal to no effect.
So what was your idea of a solution? Have you got a program or anything that you advocate for particularly?
I do. So I actually have a 3-month program to reverse type 2 diabetes, predominantly focusing on over 50s. And most of the advice I'm giving online and videos and blogs, I try to disseminate as much as possible. Now, firstly, solutions to the problem. I think beyond just me, I'm only one person. You need a massive public health campaign, 10 times the order of magnitude for what we had with smoking. The message literally has to be out there everywhere. Ultra-processed foods, sugar, refined carbs are bad. It's not okay to eat as much as you want. You have to be aware of bad ingredients, good ingredients. And of course, it will come to personal choice in the end. We're a free country. Now, obviously, I work with a bunch of people who are very, very motivated and want to commit to like a program and reversing this naturally. But even just generally, when doctors are having these conversations, how much do doctors sit down and really put everything in front of the patient and say, look, you have this diagnosis, whether it's diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, you can be put on a pill. These are the actual numbers. Number needed to treat for statins, abysmal. It might improve your life by a few days. It might lower the risk of you having a heart attack or stroke by one in a few hundred, which people understand numbers like that. Or you can reverse this yourself. These are the steps you have to do. And the path you will go down, if you want to continue your lifestyle, you can do that. It's a free country, but know that you are going to require more medications with time. If you're talking about diabetes, that will eventually come to insulin. In the US, there's a huge cost. You can go down that route, or you can really change things. And whether it's a program like mine or even more a community-based program, people have to know that these are their choices. And okay, if they take that choice to go down this path, okay, so know that that is going to come with consequences. But I don't believe doctors are really beating the drum for reversing this naturally and telling patients the truth about how much their lives will be absolutely transformed. I mean, I'm not talking about blaming people, really telling people that they got themselves into a position, they are surrounded by bad choices. It's going to take work and effort, but you don't have to go down that route of chronic disease. So, for example, if we're talking type 2 diabetes reversal naturally, that would involve a diet. Now, there's many, many different ways to do this. I adopt an individualized approach, but the basic principles are you want a diet which keeps your endogenous insulin levels low, because you should actually be thinking more about your insulin levels than your glucose. That's another thing we get wrong. Keep your insulin levels as low as possible. You don't want to eat foods which spike your insulin levels. So proteins and fats are obviously better than carbs. You want to reduce your window of eating. You don't have to be extreme with it, but you should gradually lower your window of eating. And then you want to throw in everything else with lifestyle, cardio, some strength training appropriate for your age. You want to really work on any stress in your life. Stress wreaks havoc on your insulin and your glucose. Sleep, another factor which is very important. So this isn't something which is obviously solved very easily. If it was, nobody would have type 2 diabetes. It will require a lot of intense teaching and giving people the motivation to overcome this issue. And what I just said with type 2 diabetes could also apply to high blood pressure or high cholesterol.
Yes, you've got to have the multiple approach. But if you didn't get rid of the stress, it's not just that the stress can cause the health problems, but the stress makes it also more likely that you're just going to binge on some chocolate as well. So the components are all linked, aren't they?
They are. They're all linked together as well. And the people that I've worked with who have reversed their insulin resistance, pre-diabetes, type 2 diabetes, it's always a multifaceted approach that requires constant motivation and reinforcement, but people need that from their doctors. And yep, we have a system that is stretched, but I wish doctors would spend more time on that, because people do listen to what doctors say. It has an effect. And I've even seen this in the hospital. People come to me months later, I see them again, they say, "We remember when you told us about ultra-processed foods." It echoes in their mind. Doctors do not understand their power, and we're not even using it when we're with patients. We're using it to write prescriptions, but we massively underestimate how patients remember what we say if we give them it in good sound bites as well, and then keep giving them the right motivation.
But of course, a big part of this problem is that doctors study medicine, they don't study health. And even if there was a bigger push for doctors to teach patients, I'm not convinced that they would actually be teaching them the right things at the moment.
No. I mean, of course, doctors need to know this as well. This goes back to education, medical school. I mean, let's be fair. I don't know what it's like in the UK, but in the US, doctors, there's a massive obesity problem among doctors themselves. And I frequently see doctors eating complete junk. That in itself is a ludicrous situation. Somebody has to know what they're teaching.
The approach I take, I stick more religiously for 5 days a week to a reduced carb regime, eating more fat and protein. But then when I do have that orange juice on the weekend, I make sure it's really good. So I get an orange and actually squeeze it. So much food is dead. It's all pasteurized. So a lot of the enzymes, a lot of the goodness gets destroyed in the process as well.
Of course it does. Yeah. At the end of the day, we're all mammals. We're going to be drawn to the carbs. Of course we are, because that's where the energy is. We're evolutionary primed for that. Throw in the fact that these food corporations are now employing scientists to make the food deliberately as addictive as possible, pushing chemicals into foods. It's very difficult to resist. Of course we're going to go for the bad food. I mean, I've got a sweet tooth. I have to beat that a lot of the time. But it's more important for somebody who already has an illness to be very, very particular about that. I mean, the odd treat here and there is okay, as you alluded to with the orange juice. We have to have an awareness of making it only a treat and not a habit. The amount of chemicals they put in food is nobody's business. And the numbers speak for themselves. 75% of all calorie intake now in the US is ultra-processed foods. A few decades ago, it was closer to 0%. That's your number right there that tells you why we have a problem. But rather than focus on that, the US medical establishment would rather be pushing Ozempic.
Yeah, it's tragic as well, because it's not just the fact that this drug itself is bound to have long-term problems. It's only a matter of time before all that comes out eventually. But it's actually the psychological aspect as well. Just take this injection. There's no work that has to go in to making yourself healthy. But by looking after your body and respecting it, that brings a lot of health benefits itself, I think.
Of course it does. Yes, yeah, people start feeling the health benefits very, very quickly when they make these changes in their life. When I say quickly, it's not overnight, but it happens quicker than a lot of people think. One of the best things people can do, well, let's say two best things people can do which will transform their life within 4 weeks, is once they understand what ultra-processed foods are, you cut out, minimize them, and you do 1 hour of exercise a day, and come back to me after 1 month. Your life will be completely different.
Yeah, of course. So now that you take a more holistic approach, I'm interested in where you think the nuances for where drugs are useful. Do you still prescribe much?
My whole philosophy towards drugs is a minimalistic approach. I want people on as few medications as possible. In my current work, obviously my diabetes work and program is focused on getting people off medicines. And when I work in the hospital, I'm doing acute care, so I'm not getting into chronic disease management. I used to do more sort of lifestyle medicine consultations and made it very clear that as a doctor, I'm not prescribing you any medicines at all. I'm talking to you about your lifestyle and that's it. And that's the area where I'm happiest. Having said that, when I do hospital acute care work, people come into hospital with acute heart failure, sepsis, a stroke, you have to give drugs. So one of the most satisfying illnesses to treat is sepsis. So we see people come in, their white cell count will be through the roof. They might be on oxygen if they've got pneumonia. They'll be tachycardic, and then we hammer them with broad-spectrum antibiotics, and within 3 days, all their labs have improved, and they're sitting up, ready to be discharged. Nobody's going to argue that if you have sepsis, you shouldn't get antibiotics. Of course you should. Nobody's going to argue that if you have acute heart failure, you shouldn't be given furosemide, what we call Lasix in the United States. Those drugs, I take great pleasure in prescribing because they will rapidly reverse an illness, but I want those drugs to be used for the minimal time possible. And in fact, even when I'm discharging patients after strokes or heart attacks, I will say, look, I am obligated as a doctor to have you on aspirin, clopidogrel, statin, etc. But I want you to go to your doctor in a month and go over these medicines, because if you're like 90 years old, why do you need a high dose statin? So I really try to emphasize to my patients in the hospital that I'm discharging them. We've got you through your acute illness. Your philosophy should be minimalistic. And I can't tell you the number of times, Tim, that I get thanked by relatives who will say, look, nobody's gone over this list with us before. I actually will print out on a separate piece of paper discharge instructions, usually in big letters for whoever, Mr. John Smith, diagnosis, CHF exacerbation. Here's what you do next. Number one, follow up with so-and-so in 1 week. Number two, this medicine has been reduced. Half the time I've reduced their blood pressure pills. Follow up with your doctor. Number three, discuss whether statin dose is appropriate over long term. And I make everything really clear. My whole philosophy is to be as minimalistic as possible. I can't control what happens outside of the hospital, but I can plant the seed, invariably, because most of my patients are elderly and I think they're on way too many medicines.
Of course, because the other factor here is that a lot of the trials that supposedly show benefit for some of these medications, they don't really account for a fact when people are on more than a handful of drugs, because then the interactions can dwarf the supposed benefits. So actually, the evidence starts to sort of melt away once you get put on more than 4 or 5 tablets, right?
Yeah, and this is a ludicrous thing about quote-unquote evidence-based medicine, which I personally put in inverted commas because it's a complete joke. A lot of the patients that we throw medications, or even using the example of vaccines over the last few years, who haven't even been studied in particular groups. So it's a complete joke to use the term evidence-based medicine.
Often the trials are looking at only one dimension as well, because what else could the money have been spent on? So yeah, okay, you might run a trial and compare no drug to using this drug, but well, what if we spent the money on advising people to eat properly, for example, or something like that? So
yeah.
Often they're answering the wrong question, and that's the trick, really, isn't it?
It is, and they're usually funded by the pharmaceutical company, and what I've come to realize is you can bend a trial almost any way you want to get a certain result. and they won't publish it if it hasn't got the right result. It's a joke. Evidence-based medicine. I feel so sorry for the majority of people out there who believe what the mainstream media tells them about studies, because it's a complete farce. I blame doctors too for not telling the truth. I mean, let's use the example of the COVID vaccines. So the COVID vaccines, when they were initially tested, were not tested at extremes of ages, not tested on many people with lots of chronic conditions. They weren't tested on youngsters, and we extrapolated everything to deem everything safe. Wasn't initially tested on pregnant women. And I was one of the few people that I know that actually read the study. And I remember in December 2020, I blogged about this and I said, look, this study, firstly, it's funded by the pharmaceutical company who's going to make billions of dollars. Secondly, we've excluded many, many groups. And we have this tiny absolute risk reduction, a massive number needed to treat. Nobody's talking about this. And I blogged about it. It's still up there. And I remember slowly over the next few months seeing the vaccine rolled out to more and more groups that were never even included in the study. And I kept asking my colleagues around me, have you read the study? And I would say probably less than 5% had. And it just kept getting worse. Even 6 months later, did you actually read the initial study? No. And these were doctors. I'm sure this is the same in the UK. I was thinking, hold on a minute. You have the biggest healthcare story of our lifetimes, probably. You're a doctor and you couldn't even be bothered to read the study and you're pushing this. It's such a dereliction of duty. How does that even happen? And it speaks volumes for our profession and how they mindlessly follow what they're told. There were no excuses for that whatsoever. And we could apply this to many, many different facets of medicine where the doctors who are prescribing and pushing medicines haven't got a clue about the real world benefits, who was studied. It makes a mockery of our whole profession. And if doctors can be like that, I mean, what hope is there for any other profession or the general public who will be accepting these recommendations?
Dr. Malotra has been banging the drum on this about relative versus absolute risk and how this is manipulated between looking at benefits and harms. The promotion of the COVID vaccines was obviously completely insane. They were using relative risk.
Yeah, which they always use, because relative risk, for anyone listening who doesn't understand it, will always magnify the results of any study and make them sound better than they are. But actually, absolute risk reduction is the better one to look at because it tells you the real world implications. And it's still happening today. I mean, various meds are being dished out like candy now. Newer meds, Jardiance comes to mind in the US. And you actually look at the studies, and the fact is that these medicines have tiny improvements. And the funny thing is that I think doctors years ago, I mean, even going back to Hippocrates, they knew that the fundamentals of your health and well-being were your diet. I mean, Hippocrates' quotes are timeless. If you haven't seen them, it's amazing what he was saying 2,500 years ago about what people eat. He was pushing it. And I'm not saying that doctors need to just talk about food as medicine, but surely that has to be the basic fundamental of everything. People don't think about this enough, but every single cell in your body and every single thought that you have is powered by what you eat. Everything. So junk in, junk out. In my opinion, that should be the very first thing when we're talking about chronic disease. Obviously, this doesn't apply if somebody's got a broken bone or acute sepsis, but we're talking about chronic disease. I think the first recommendation should always be something related to diet.
Of course, junk in, junk out, and that applies to the evidence-based medicine too, because if you put junk studies in, you're going to get junk guidance out, aren't you?
You are, yep. And there are enormous conflicts of interest in this field. There are billions of dollars to be made, and they are being made. Now, unfortunately, we're losing the battle right now.
I noticed recently you posted and said you didn't take the COVID vaccine. Was that a pretty easy decision for you?
It was easy. So my story is that I had COVID in March of 2020, and it was very mild infection. And then I was tracking my antibody levels, which were very high. And I knew that I didn't need to take the vaccine because I had natural immunity. I initially had a threat of losing my work, having to leave the country. And I would have actually done that rather than take the COVID vaccine, because I feel strongly that once you lose that autonomy, there's nothing left. If I, as a doctor, don't even have that level of autonomy, then to be honest, what's my life worth? Thankfully, common sense prevailed in the end. I also had reservations about mRNA technology, which I still have today. I was just not comfortable with it. I was aware of the mRNA that had been tested before and how those studies had been abandoned. I didn't believe that mRNA completely breaks down, and I wasn't comfortable with long-term consequences. So I did not take the COVID vaccine. Best healthcare decision of my life. I never needed it. And to be honest, even if I didn't have natural immunity, I still may not have taken it. But yeah, I'm one of the few doctors that not only didn't take it, but is also proud of not taking it. And I view autonomy above anything else. And I was actually proud of the UK in this regard, because I saw that a few of the Royal Colleges, while they were pushing the COVID vaccine, they did not advocate for it being mandated. Whereas the United States medical authorities were very cowardly in this regard, and they stood full square behind the COVID vaccine mandates, which were very unethical. So I was kind of stuck in the US with that. But in the UK, you did not have the mandate that went through in the NHS.
It was extremely close, though. It got pulled at the last minute in England. In Scotland, it never bothered me because it was never really on the cards in Scotland. I didn't take it either. It was an easy decision for me too. I never really thought I was at particular risk from COVID because I was looking at the age and morbidity risk factors. So I never really thought that there was much risk. And I was aware with the amount of corruption in the pharmaceutical industry that I just would be very wary about anyone who's telling me that there's no long-term harms. How can you know that without having long-term studies? That didn't make any sense to me. It didn't take long for me to then start thinking about the mechanisms. What the messenger RNA effectively does, it's in this lipid nanoparticle that is distributed throughout the body, and then you're going to express foreign protein on important cells like your endothelium, your brain, your heart. And what's going to happen next is you're going to start attacking your own body.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, good for you that you're one of the few doctors that questioned that. I was amazed by how many doctors just lined up, and it's a new technology, and they had complete trust in the pharmaceutical industry, who are the most dishonest industry. If you simply look at the facts on this, the amount of criminal and civil convictions that the pharmaceutical industry has and how many scandals they've been involved in, if a doctor even had 1/10 of their criminal record, they would never be allowed anywhere near a patient. So quite how this happened, I do not know.
And of course, the trials were sabotaged as well. They gave the placebo group the drug so that it was very difficult then to do studies retrospectively. I mean, who's going to fund these studies? Who's going to look at it properly? There's not really any motivation, is there?
Exactly. I mean, you had some whistleblowers that came forward, but they were completely suppressed by the medical industrial complex. You look at some of the people who tried to speak up, and you looked at how medical publications treated them. Unbelievable. And these are all of the things that have made me lose complete faith in the medical profession and the way that medicine and healthcare work.
We've talked about solutions in terms of things like dietary changes, but what about the solutions to the bigger picture? If you were the chief medical officer or chief health officer, what do you think we should be doing to resolve this? Do you think we can regulate ourselves out of it?
As somebody who has fairly libertarian views, I'm generally not in favor of taxing your way out of a problem. But you look at what happened with cigarettes. I'm back in the UK right now. I was in a Tesco earlier today, and I noticed that the cigarettes all have these massive warning labels on them and pictures of the damage done by smoke. And my own opinion is that sugar and ultra-processed foods are way worse than tobacco. Why have we not got warnings on sugar and ultra-processed foods? I'm in favor of more positive ways to do this. Why not start a big push to make the real foods the default option by making them cheaper? Huge segments of the population will always go for the cheapest option. So rather than make the packet of cereal or the ready-made meal so cheap, just make it really cheap to buy vegetables, fruits, meat, dairy.
So redirecting existing agricultural subsidies from processed food towards real food.
Exactly. Yeah. And then make it trendy again to cook at home. I mean, you look at all of the influence that celebrities have right now with the culture on Instagram and Twitter, what have you. I mean, if celebrities spoke out on this issue and said, we have a big problem, no pun intended, but obesity levels are going through the roof and we need to start thinking more about what we're eating, they would have massive influence. But instead, they choose to talk about all these other nonsense things. at the end of the day, I mean, humans tend to move in herds. And my own thought is at some point, this is going to break the system. I mean, right now, it's probably on a path to where it's going to bring the country down. If you look at what's happening in the US in terms of healthcare costs, lost productivity, increased taxes, eventually, we're probably going to get into a situation where we're forced to take some action. You cannot possibly have a country where 70% of people are obese. You can't do it. You can't afford to have everybody on Ozempic every single week. It's a crazy, ludicrous situation. So I would definitely start with a massive public health campaign and then work to make real food the default option. And there's many, many ways you can do that. I would throw in a few other things if I was in charge in the US. I would immediately ban pharmaceutical ads on TV. I think that would do a lot of good. And also, I would force every single physician society to openly publish where their money is coming from and who their sponsors are every single month, and then have people share that so that everybody knows. Right now they do it, but they do it in a kind of concealed way. We need, across the board, more awareness to focus people's attention away from a pharmaceutical cure to the current ills with chronic disease, and instead more natural lifestyle related solutions. But there are many, many parts to that to get people on the right path.
The problem is that it's this positive feedback loop, because people are eating these ready meals, they're not teaching their kids how to eat, so it's the next generation affected too.
Yep, great point. And then you throw in various aspects of our modern mainstream culture which completely take away personal responsibility, and it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Before we can even think about governments getting involved, there's a bigger problem to fix, isn't there? The corporate capture. And this is one of the reasons I set up the podcast, is that I think it's going to have to come from a grassroots movement.
It has to. And we're seeing signs of it in the US. I mean, you look at RFK Kennedy, who's running for office, and this is a big part of his platform. Problems can only be ignored for so long, and we've seen that throughout history. And human beings only tend to act when things are really bad. And then, who knows, the pendulum will swing back the other way. I mean, nobody could have imagined 30 years ago that we would have such an aversion to smoking. I remember when I was young, people smoking on planes, it was a normal thing to do. So don't rule out the fact that a pendulum can swing back really fast, and humans move very quickly in herds. So once it happens, it just takes a few cards on the deck to kind of break, and the whole thing comes tumbling down. And it will. And then there'll be probably something else to focus on. That's how things work. But I'm cautiously optimistic, because things can only carry on like this for so long. We're going to break the system. People are going to die earlier. People are going to get sicker. And as you mentioned there, the economic aspect of this, I mean, right now we have a saying, everybody and their mother is on Ozempic in the US. People are paying out of pocket $1,000 a month, and eating healthy food is a fraction of that. Makes no sense at all. By the way, I'm very, very worried about Ozempic, Wegovy, semaglutide, using different names here, but I think we're going to find immense problems from it. I don't think it's taken off in the UK to the same extent it has in the US. Obviously, it works because it stops you from eating, which also takes down the whole narrative of the medical establishment in the US trying to push the fact, or their fact, that obesity is genetic and nothing to do with what you eat. But yet they're pushing a drug which basically makes you lose weight by eating less, which is absolutely ridiculous. But yes, it will work to make you lose weight. But I've already seen a lot of people have big complications with Ozempic, and people can only carry on for so long. And then as soon as they come off it, there's an immediate rebound. That the medical establishment could even think that a solution to this problem is getting people on an injection weekly for the rest of their lives rather than address the root cause. It would have surprised me more, but the medical establishment won't address root causes.
And what sort of problems are you seeing with these drugs in terms of complications?
Well, I've heard of cases and seen them myself where people have significant gastrointestinal issues. They may develop inflammation within their colon. They're developing pancreatic issues. There have also been some question marks over neurological issues. The human body cannot be fooled. This notion, and this gets to the arrogance of a lot of medicine and science, that you can trick the body somehow, you can't trick it. Or if you do, it will be very temporary. There will be a rebound effect. And ultimately, these medications work by altering the hormonal balance, which can also be done through eating real food. But we're seeing now huge issues where patients have actually come off the medications because of these side effects. I'm actually worried about two things, which I believe could well show up. Obviously, there's no crystal ball. I recently tweeted about this. I'm worried about long-term pancreatic effects, and I think that it might soon start to be associated with cancers.
Wow. They're blunt instrument drugs, aren't they? The body is so complex. You interfere in one place, and then you create a whole bunch of problems elsewhere. And those problems might not be evident immediately in a trial. It might take a few years to actually see what those problems are. And then, of course, they just come out with a slightly different drug so that we can start the process again.
Exactly. Well said. And we've seen this time and again with many different drugs. And the drug companies, the medical establishment, is focused on their short-term profit. That's all that matters to them. And there will be a huge chunk of the population that is susceptible to this type of marketing and solution. And they know this. I mean, they may be many things. They may be corrupt. They may be bad players, but they're not stupid. They know how to make money off people. And then years down the line, you find out what the effects are. Similar to the COVID vaccine situation, we are millions of years in the making to even think that you can fool or trick the body and there's not going to be any kind of repercussions. It just shows the level of arrogance that we're dealing with, Tim.
Yeah. You said you were optimistic. I'm optimistic too. So I qualified about 14 years ago. And then it probably took me about 3 or 4 years to really appreciate just how insane the current system is. But really, there wasn't much I could do about it. It wasn't really easy to find other doctors that felt the same way. And then COVID happened. And what that did is it allowed all these doctors to find each other because they were so outraged. What happened? So I'm hopeful from that aspect that there are a lot of people around the world who wouldn't have connected if it wasn't for COVID. And then COVID insanity has pretty big silver lining on that respect. And I'm hopeful that in the longer term, that will pay off.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Tim, and very well said there. And the example is how we've connected and people are seeing what's happening. And at the end of the day, what is going to push us over the edge, as it were, of an awakening is the fact that there's a yearning for it, Tim. There really is. People want to be well. They don't want to be sick. They don't want to be obese. They don't want to be inflamed. And people are going to very soon start realizing where the authenticity is, where the factors are that are keeping them sick, which have conflicts of interest, that want to push drugs on them, which are expensive and not working. People will eventually wake up to this, and more people are going to be drawn towards more holistic, natural care and realize that the medical societies, the organizations that are currently in place are not going to be the answer. They are not going to get people better. All they are going to do is maintain a recurrent customer base, which unfortunately currently is their goal. They're not to be trusted. And whether something happens, I mean, let's say somebody like RFK gets elected, which probably isn't going to happen, but there's going to be some sort of jolt to the system, which is going to eventually force these organizations to rethink. And I'd be happier if they all disbanded and we started again from scratch with that focus on real health and wellness. But if that doesn't happen, more and more people are going to be drawn to sources like us. The medical establishment won't go down easily. They will do their best to threaten, to coerce, to say that the other sources of information are misinformation or disinformation. We know their game well. And this is something which has gone on for a long time. I mean, it goes right back, without going off into a whole other tangent. This is what happened at the turn of the last century with Rockefeller in America, when there were lots of other alternative treatments available, many of which came from Native American culture and actually worked. And their whole playbook was to label anything alternative that didn't fit the big pharma narrative as quackery. And they're still doing it now. That's how they work. But people are going to be more wise to that.
It's a playbook, isn't it? Well, it's been a fascinating chat. I'm really thankful that you've come on so early as well, because I'm only just getting started. You've got a pretty high profile and it's going to really help me get the podcast off the ground.
Oh, my pleasure. And I encourage everybody to follow you on social media as well. It's been a really good discussion and we've covered a lot, and I really hope we've had a chance to help a lot of people.
Yeah, please do follow our next. I've got some amazing guests lined up. So set notifications on your favorite podcast streaming platform too. And please do help spread the word and share with friends and family. I'd really appreciate it. So Dr. Dand, have you got a final message for our listeners?
I would encourage anyone who is listening now, or I'm sure many people are going to listen afterwards as well, to really keep an open mind and remember that at the end of the day, this is about your health and well-being and your family's health and well-being. Life is really, really short. We all know that. So you want to live your best life. You want to be as healthy as possible. We are nothing without health. I believe it's the absolutely most important thing in anyone's life. And yes, I believe it comes before family, because if you haven't got your health, you cannot be there for your family. So your health is number one. Please, please realize that there are a lot of forces around you right now that are trying to drag you in a bad direction, and they're winning right now. At the end of the day, the best you can do is be aware of everything. Do little things every day, like read ingredient labels. Do not give in to your temptations, which will come. And I always like to tell people, when you're faced with that bad choice in life, whatever it is, whether it's eating that cream cake or not exercising, just think of that establishment figure in their suit just smiling at you, saying, yeah, we've got them, we've got them, we're going to get them. And if you dislike the establishment as much as I do, then that should be enough motivation for you, because they want you and your family on that bad path so that you can be a good recurrent pharma customer. You can get sick like millions of other people, and you'll help them make a lot of money. And folks, you do not want to be that person. You can escape and you can have a much, much better and happier and healthier life. And also, everybody, please spread the word to as many people as possible, your loved ones around you, that there are more than one way to think about things. Don't go believing the mainstream media and all of the establishment figures who are pulling you in the wrong direction every single day. So that would be my final message to him.
Exactly. You're completely right there, because what you're actually doing is you're feeding these companies. We can't really expect governments to do anything because of the capture. But what we can do as a sort of grassroots movement is defund these companies by stopping buying their products. When you look at who owns these companies, you'll see that with one hand, they're poisoning you with big food, and then you've got big pharma the other hand, and then who owns them all? It's the same big corporate entities that own everything.
Exactly.
Well, thanks ever so much for joining us. I'm looking forward to seeing more of your posts, because they always just hit the spot, and I'm just like, I couldn't have put that better. Big pharma must hate you so bad.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I wear that as a badge of honor. Thank you again, Tim.